My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. That was great, and I really enjoyed that. Tony and Kristen, is that right? Those are the two people. Well, congratulations.
Christine.
Well, congratulations. You know, my sponsor used to tell me that the newest person is the most important member of the group. Of course, I never believed that. I always think I'm the most important person. Now, if I was you guys, I wouldn't pay any attention to anything I'm going to say tonight. I know this is your first AA meeting, your 50th AA meeting, but the truth of the matter is, don't judge AA by what I have to say. It's an interesting thing. It always amazes me that I'll do a meeting, and because you all know what my favorite topic is, the topic that's supposed to stop people from coming to AA. Isn't that what they all say? They say, if I had heard the stuff that you're talking about when I came into AA, I would have left. I said, well, I guess you weren't as bad off as I was. But, you know, if you do leave, I don't know where an alcoholic's going to leave to. I guess you leave and you either die or you get bad enough so you come back with a different attitude. And since this whole thing is about willingness and attitude, maybe it's not so bad somebody should leave. Maybe if I say something that pisses somebody off, maybe it's not so bad that they leave and go out and drink. You know, maybe it'll help them come in here with the right attitude. An attitude that maybe I need to change my thinking about things. Maybe an attitude of humility saying, I don't know everything, and maybe instead of turning this guy off, I ought to listen to what he has to say. Maybe that's the attitude that will help you out in AA. Maybe an if only, or you don't understand, or I'm different, or yes but. Maybe that kind of attitude doesn't do real well in here. Maybe what you end up doing is just sort of polluting the whole deal and wasting people's time. Maybe it's not such a bad idea that people leave here and go out. Maybe we shouldn't worry so much about that stuff. I've never seen how worrying about an alcoholic stops him from drinking. I've never seen that happen. I've never seen how begging an alcoholic not to drink or talking to him for 15 hours has stopped him from drinking. I've never seen that happen, you know? So maybe it's not such a big, maybe we shouldn't be worried so much about alcoholics, you know, whether they drink or they don't drink. Maybe we ought to just sort of focus on ourselves. You know, and just try to carry the message instead of trying to carry the alcoholic. You know? Maybe you ought to stop worrying about trying to carry the alcoholic and not piss off the alcoholic. Maybe you ought to stop worrying about making them uncomfortable. Maybe they ought to be uncomfortable. You know, maybe if you come in here, one of the things that should happen is you should feel uncomfortable. You know, I mean, if you're in here, you probably feel more comfortable in a bar, hanging around people that aren't paying their child support or not having any responsibility. Maybe if you're real comfortable with the crowd you're hanging out with, maybe that's a bad sign. Maybe that's not a good sign. Maybe it's because they remind you too much of the guys you used to hang out with in the bar. I don't know. I really don't know the answer to these questions. I'm just filling in an hour. It's not as if I have a plan here. Actually, I did have a plan. I want you to know something. I did notes and everything. Screw it, you know? It ain't going to work out. I'm going to read a few things from the book. The stuff I always read just to sort of, you know, this has nothing to do with you guys. Actually, this is to get me straight because I may wander off and start. I want to remember what I'm here for and why I'm here. And then there's a couple things I want to talk about. We're technically on the eighth step. You know, it's doubtful I'll say anything that has anything to do with it, but it's okay. Or maybe I will. You know, it's like that moose thing. And if you weren't here for the moose thing, well, it's on tape. You know, it's that, you see the moose, you know. But in any event, let me read you something. I have a certain song in AA, a certain theme in AA, something I like to talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Most people who have been to my meetings sort of know what that's about, and I'm not going to vary that theme. Every meeting we have is going to be about the same thing. It's only going to be about one thing. It's probably going to get kind of boring. It's going to get kind of repetitious. hey, if you know I do my job properly, then you walk out of here whether you love me or hate me, you just won't forget about the one thing I'm talking about. You know? And you know, if I'm wrong, it won't hurt you. And if I'm right, you know, it might save your life one day. Because no matter how bad things are getting, maybe all of a sudden it'll just sort of pop in your mind, that one thing. Maybe the one thing I'm going to talk about tonight. Page 29. And there is a solution. The magic word that we're operating under through this entire step series, the only thing that's really important, the only thing that means anything, is relationship. Relationship with God. Now, there's other relationships going on, but all the other relationships that we're going to be talking about tonight, because we're going to be talking about relationships with people, relationships with yourself, all those other relationships hinge on, our mirror images are of, and are to a certain extent dependent upon my relationship with God. Now, we're way past the third step, so I don't have to worry about spoon-feeding you. I don't have to worry about arguing with people whether or not there is a God or there isn't a God, because we went past that. And we said AA says there either is a God or is a God. And AA comes down in favor, there is a God. They call it a God, they call it a creator. You know, we turn our will, we're past the third step. We've turned our will and our lives over to Him. We said a third step prayer. Remember what that was? Pretty heavy-duty stuff. And so we're way past that deal. So I want to read. Here's what page 29 says, and there is a solution. Further on, now we're actually approaching the area where they talk about in the big book where the promises start happening. Those pretty neat things. Say if we're halfway, you know, through this deal, you know, before we're going to see a new freedom and a new happiness. And I want to talk a little bit about the new freedom. Now, one thing I don't talk about, and I used to talk about a lot at AA meetings, there's nothing wrong with talking about this. There's going to be some guys that you're going to see do these meetings that are going to tell you how to do the eighth step. They're going to tell you how to do the ninth step. They're going to tell you how they did the eighth step. They're going to tell you how they did the ninth step. And there's nothing wrong with it. That's a good thing. I've done that before. That's just not the way I do things right now. I have a different way of doing things. And I'm going to talk about other stuff. You want to know how to do the eighth and ninth step? You're going to talk to your sponsor. You're going to talk to other people in the group. You're going to talk about older members. You're going to go to another step meeting. You're going to even read the book. You might read the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just going to tell you how to do the eighth and ninth step. I'm not going to tell you how to do that. You know what I mean? And if I sponsor somebody and they have a question of the eighth and ninth, they call me up. I'll talk to them. You know? We're not going to talk about how you do this stuff. I'm going to talk to you about some other things. I'm going to talk about the only thing I'm interested in really is how these impinge upon and what they have to do about that relationship you're building with God and the power that's going to flow in and the transformation that's going to happen in your life. Because here's what you want. You know, you want the promises happening to you. You want the real promises. Remarkable things happening to you, right? You want to be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which you had not even dreamed, right? You want that stuff, right? I mean, you know, not drinking is a good thing, but that's like we're past that not drinking. We're going on the rocket ship ride. We want to be amazed before we're halfway through. You want to be like amazed. Because you know, if you're not amazed, you're going to wind up in the titty bar. Guys, if you're not amazed, men, I'm talking to men, not women, because I don't know where the women wind up. Well, I know where the women wind up. They wind up with the guys that are in the titty bar. That's where the women wind up, with those guys. That's where they wind up, with those guys. But men, here's what the deal is. If you don't get amazed at this thing, if you're not rocketed, if you're not knocked out of your socks about this thing, you will wind up in the titty bar. Drunk. That's where you wind up, you know. Or, almost as bad, you'll wind up sitting in AA, but just one miserable son of a bitch. Wishing you were in the titty bar and just mad at everybody else. But you know, here's the good news. 11, 12, 15 years, they'll hand you a medallion anyway. You won't be sponsoring anybody. You won't have a sponsor. You'll be sitting alone in the corner sucking your thumb saying, that Russell guy's full of shit, you know? You'll be talking bad things about other people behind their back. You'll be doing everything but having the excitement that goes on in here, the joy in your life. You won't experience a joyous life, but you'll be picking up that medallion. You'll be picking up that medallion. There'll be no transformation, though. And there won't be anybody asking you to sponsor him because really nobody wants what you have. You're just some guy sitting in the corner. They say, yeah, that's old Charlie. You'll just be a bleeding deacon or one of those people that just sort of grow old in here. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover it. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual, and the personal experiences are very important. It says our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we are like now. As a matter of fact, it says the three things we're supposed to be convinced of. It says being convinced. If you're not convinced, you can't even go forward. It says that we're alcoholics and can't manage our own lives. We're alcoholics, we can't manage our own lives. That no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Whatever this alcoholism is, and it's more than just not drinking, because the drinking's a symptom of the disease. It says unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, sobriety will be precarious. Of true happiness, he'll find none at all. How would you like that deal? You don't get to drink, you don't get to find true happiness, and your sobriety is precarious. That sounds like fun. You know? It's sort of like that guy they talk about in the book, here and then, now and again, alcoholic, sober for a few moments, short period of time, says feel better, look better, having a better time. We laugh at such Sally when we hear that. We know he'll try the old game again. He'll know loneliness as few do. The wish for the jumping off place. This is a sober guy because he's not what? Because he's not happy with his sobriety. Because he's not happy with his sobriety. He's sniffing around looking for something else because whatever's going on here is not making him happy. Apparently being happy, being filled with joy, being excited about stuff has something to do with staying sober for a long period of time. And who the hell would want us to? Now we go through rough times, we go through character building and suffering here. We talked about that last time, but who the hell would want to hang out down here for the long haul, even if you're not drinking, if it's just a bitch, if life is just crap all the time? I mean, one would hope that somewhere during, you know, I know for the first 5 years or 10 years or 15 or whatever long it takes you, it just seems to go up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. It's just a constant anxiety attack and roller coaster of emotions. I understand that. But one would hope somewhere along the way you say to yourself, there's got to be something better than this deal. There's got to be something better than this constant worrying about money or relationships or loneliness. Is there any light at the end of the tunnel? And I'm here to tell you there's a lot of light at the end of the tunnel. It's in the big book and it's all true. There's some amazing stuff going on. If you don't get it, if you don't get to go to the banquet, you got nobody to blame but yourself. Because it's all here for you. And you don't have to have money in the bank to get it either. You just have to be willing to surrender. Surrender what? You got to surrender more. More than what I've done already? Much more. Much more. You know, it says, rarely have we seen a perfect failure who's thoroughly followed our path. Have you thoroughly followed their path? You know, the path of those guys that said, what they say? You say, oh yeah, I've thoroughly followed up. Really? Have you done what they did? Do you know what they did? Did you know what they were doing for the first 4 years in here? Do you know what they were reading? Do you know how they were acting? Do you know how they were 12-stepping? Have you read what they were doing? Were they really doing it the way you were doing it? Are you really? Can I really call you? This is what separates the men from the boys. We got some men in here. Can I really call you a man? You say, you think the difference between the men, what do you think the men and the boys? Everybody's sober here. You know, I mean, what is it, Tony? Tony, God bless you, he's picked up a wife, you know, he's sober. Christine's sober. I'm 27 years, I'm sober. Everybody's sober here. As a matter of fact, every alcoholic I've ever known that slipped was sober right up until he slipped. I mean, sober is a dime in a dozen in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a separation between the men and the boys. Are you a man in AA? Are you really a man in AA? Because if you say you are, that means what it says by our definition. It says to be called a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. Is that you? If you and I hang out together in the fellowship of the Spirit, and we start talking about stuff, and I start talking about you're growing in the likeness of your creator, like they talk about in the 12 and 12 in chapter 6. If we talk about the humility to get on your knees and pray, Lord, let me be like you. Let me be perfect. If I taught you about growing in the image and likeness of my creator, are you and I going to be simpatico, or are you going to look at me and say, well, this is a bunch of horse shit because you're scared or because you don't want to go that far or you're not willing? I mean, what are you? Are you a man or a boy? Or are you just one of these bullshit artists that would rather not listen to this because it makes you uncomfortable? Because by doing this, you might have to do more and you might have to change even further. I thought AA was just about not drinking and going to meetings. I thought it's just about not drinking and going to meetings. Is that what you think? Do you think that's all you have to do is not... If you heard that so much in AA, just don't drink and go to meetings and do the next right thing? You really think that's what this is all about? You really think this big book, that's what it's all about? You think these guys that we're talking about, that's what it's all about? Just not drinking, go to meetings and doing the next right thing? Doing the next right thing? That sounds like a pretty good philosophy. I come from the school where there's a thing called Chapter of the Agnostics, which is written to unbelievers to tell them they have to abandon that attitude and they have to trust God and the power comes from God. And it says if mere philosophies or moral convictions to get us by here, we'd be well a long time ago. But those moral convictions, philosophies, no matter how good they sound like, doing this was never good enough for us because we didn't have the power to do it. Lack of power was our dilemma. We had to find a power. And that means we've got to talk about God. You see, in the Alcoholics Anonymous I'm about, it's not about doing the next right thing. It's about having a relationship with God that gives you, empowers you to do the next right thing. Because if you're looking at Him and you have a relationship with Him, you will do the next right thing. If you don't have a relationship with Him, you'll do the next right thing for a few moments. For you. How would you know what the next right thing is? The next right thing is going to be whatever you think it is. I never screwed anybody in my life that I didn't think was the right thing. I never hated anybody in my life. I never gossiped against anybody in my life. I never character assassinated anybody in my life. I never did anything bad in my life where I didn't think I was doing right, but I wasn't ready to defend it. How would you know what the right thing was if you go by your own standards? That's cute. The standards of recovering alcoholics. Partial payments, minimum payments on the Visa card. That you use to charge off shit you don't even need. To buy stuff with money you don't even have. To impress people you don't even like. And that's just a molecule of your life on the planet Earth. And I'm going to trust you because you're going to say, well, I swear to do the next right thing, please. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. You walk up to some guy or somebody you're being sponsored. This is just my, this is all my opinion. It's all my opinion stuff. So if you don't agree with it, you just don't agree with it. It's okay. I'm just reading from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just reading from this book. This is our book. This is the basic text we agree on. This is the basic text. This is what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. Okay? If I say that it's not in here, then forget about it. It says, each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he establishes his relationship with God. You ask somebody that you look up to, what about your relationship with God? He says, I don't know what you're talking about. Run, don't walk away from that deal. Not because he's a bad person, not because he's not a nice person. It's just that he doesn't know anything about the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He doesn't know anything about our program. You want somebody who's going to talk to you about our program because you want to be the guy who's really ever seen a person fail, has thoroughly followed our path. You want to follow their path. So let's just go through a few of these things. I'm not going to go through all of them. It's the things I usually go through. My friend will go through all the way through Bill's story all the way to the end. Then I'm going to tell you a little story about some things. My friend promised that when, and listen for the word relationship. My friend promised when these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. Bill Wilson was 12-step by Ebbie Thatcher. The 12-step by Ebbie Thatcher, what Ebbie Thatcher told him about, which he called a religious idea. Because back then, unlike today, they weren't scared of using the word religion. As a matter of fact, back then, and when they wrote this book, they said, we encourage church membership. It said, begin to see how religious people are right. Get away your prejudice from religion. We begin to see where they're right, you see. But of course, that has to do with if you're interested in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're interested in just being an alcoholic, then you can say, well, that's a bunch of bullshit. Then you can stay the way you are and get prejudiced against that stuff and get pissed off about it and just turn it off. But if you want to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and you want to read the book, it says we begin to see where religious people are right. It's not a dirty word in AA. That's right. Religion and God is not a dirty word in AA. So Bill Wilson was 12-stepped. This is the guy that 12-stepped Bill Wilson. This is the message that Bill Wilson used to carry on. It was out of that 12-step that was done 50, 60 years ago. That's why you are sober today. That's how this book was written. And this was the message. My friend promised, when all these things were done, all these steps, when he did everything that he was supposed to do, you know what he would get? $1 million? No. A car? No. A girlfriend? No. The ability to do the next right thing? No. A perfect human being? No. Lose weight? No. My friend promised when these things were done, this is the only thing he'd get. This is the only thing he'd get. When these things were done, I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator. That's the only promise you get in here. A new relationship. If you're not interested in that, you're in the wrong organization. You're in the wrong organization. And if you think these are strong words, I'm going to read you some more words. These aren't my words. These are their words. You would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which would answer all my problems. How would you like an answer, a way of living that would answer every one of your problems? How would you like to have that in your problem, that any problem you have, you'd have an answer to? That'd be pretty cool. Belief in the power of God, plus enough willingness, honesty, and humility to establish and maintain the new order of things were the essential elements. That means absolutely, that means necessary elements. There is a solution. We found that much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which we've not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, about life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact in our lives today, the number one fact in these guys' lives today, is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives, lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish things for us we couldn't do for ourselves. We in our turn sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, designed for living. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms as soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. When we sincerely took such a position, a position to turn our will and our lives over to Him in that relationship, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. Being all-powerful, He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. How are you going to stay? How are you going to keep close to Him when you don't even have a relationship with Him, when you don't even talk to Him, when you're not even thinking about Him, when you don't even want to think about Him? How are you going to know what His work is? How are you going to know how to do His work well when you don't even know what His work is? You wouldn't even know where to go to find out what His work is. You know, later on in the book of Vision for You, it says He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. How are you going to know who to fellowship with? Who are you going to talk with if you're not talking to Him? Because He's the one that's supposed to show you who to hang out with even. You don't even know who to hang out with. Do you know that? Do you know alcoholics don't know who to associate with? Do you know most alcoholics who drink in Alcoholics Anonymous drink because they're associating with the wrong people? Did you know that? Did you know that alcoholics who are out there who are drinking and hurting their wives and their families or their husband or whatever it is doing terrible things, you know they're hanging around people that aren't helping them, that are dragging them down, and they don't know that that's bad for them because they think the people that are hurting them are actually helping them, their best friends, their drinking buddies? Did you know your natural inclination will lead you to the wrong person to hang out with? You didn't even know that. Because if you knew that, if we were good at picking out buddies and people to hang out with, it wouldn't say, God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. It would say, go pick somebody out to hang out with. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We were reborn. We were born again. Not my wording, their wording. Into action. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. It's all about that relationship. Page 77, into action. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not the end in itself. What's the end? It's that relationship. It's doing His will, right? The end is this. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. Oh, but you know, if we talk about God, that may scare out the newcomer. That's funny. In working with others, I mean, I know that's your opinion, but here's what they say in working with others. It says this. It is not a matter of giving that is the question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcohol commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. The whole point is to be relying upon that relationship with God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Until he moves to Minnesota, until he gets a car, until he gets his wife back, until he gets the money back or the job back. Nonsense. Bullshit. That's the vulgar word for nonsense. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job. Wife or no wife. Husband or no husband. We simply do not stop drinking as long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence upon God. How about this one? Let no alcoholic say he cannot recover unless he has his family back. Or unless he has anything back. Or unless anything changes. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. Remind the prospect that his recovery is not dependent upon people. It is dependent upon his relationship with God. Burn the idea into the that's not like even saying we'll try to suggest to him. That's like you take the iron out of the fire. He says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chomping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting to windmills and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. With derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my 8 years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great. But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, this is what he ends with. Above all, top-notch, the head, the number one thing. I have gained the greatest thing. The number one thing, the greatest thing I've earned in 18 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, the greatest thing I've learned. I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. You know something? I could have a conversation with that guy. We could hang out together. I think we'd be real good friends. You know? I think we'd really be good buddies. You know something? I have hung out with that guy. I've hung out with 100 guys like that. We are good friends. Could you hang out with that guy? Do you even want to hang out with that guy? Could you talk to that guy? What would you guys talk about? Your boyfriend? Your girlfriend? How much money you have in the bank? You know, what's your job like? What kind of conversation goes on in your head 90% of the time during the day? Who are you talking about or thinking about? Where's your passion? Where's all your time, your thought life spent on? What do you focus on all the time? What are you thinking about all the time? Does it make you feel good? No, it doesn't. It makes you feel like shit. You want to know why you're nervous? You want to know why you're anxious? You want to know why you're in fear? You know why? You want to know why you're worried? You want to know why you're lonely? And you want to know why you're bored? Because you're thinking about them or you, and you're not thinking about him because you don't have any relationship with him. Because you think Alcoholics Anonymous is don't drink, go to meetings, and do the next right thing. Boy, that's a sentence from hell. You can do that in prison. They do that in prison.
Yeah.
They don't drink, they lock you up, and you do the next right thing, or else they take away your game time. That's a prison. That isn't a new freedom or a new happiness. That's some warden hanging over your head saying, be a good boy. So all these steps, every single one of them, every single one of them is there as an exercise to bring you closer to that relationship and build out that relationship until we get to step 12, or step 11, where what we're going to focus on now is making the relationship stronger. And then finally, after we do all that, we go out to step 12, and you know what we do? We disciple and teach others. And if you ain't discipling and teach others that stuff, you're not teaching them what we do in AA. Because the people in AA, the people that Bill Wilson was talking to, wanted a message of great weight and depth. You know, they may have good messages in like dry out tanks or in treatment centers or stuff like that, but it's not a message of weight and depth. Don't drink and go to meetings is not a message of weight and death. Do the next right thing is not a message of weight and death. Have a relationship with God is a message of weight and death. Because it's mysterious and not and impossible to understand. It's really weighty. They've been thinking about that stuff for thousands and thousands. There's all sorts of books written about that stuff. All sorts of mysteries about that. So that's a weighty, depthy message. So you know that eighth step has some, you know, so all these steps somehow have something to do, and don't ask me why. I'm not good at whys. Why do you have to humble yourself? Why do you have to, why does it say, like in step seven we were talking about, was humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings? Why do we have to ask him? Why do we have to ask him humbly? Doesn't he know already? Doesn't he know? Why do we have to ask him? Why does he need to be asked? Maybe he doesn't need to be asked. Maybe what the seventh step is all about is letting us know that we need him. Maybe it's just one more step in the notch to prove to us that in order to do this, he doesn't need us. Maybe what the seventh step is about is for us to be thoroughly convinced, even more, that we need him. You know, when alcoholics really think they need somebody, you can't get rid of them. But usually we're looking for money or sex or stuff like that. Stalkers of the world unite, you know what I mean? Maybe we should be stalking God. Maybe we should be stalking him. Maybe if we really knew what he could do for us, and we knew what could happen to our lives, maybe we'd be thinking and stalking that boy out. You know, at the end of Vision for You, it says this, at the very end, one of the last things that it says, in Vision for You, it says, our book, it says, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit or contact with you who wrote this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon him. You probably think, well, all the people that wrote this book are dead. I can't possibly have a relationship with them. You would be absolutely wrong. But then again, if you deal on the material plane, if you think as a material person, then the only thing you see is whether somebody's dead or alive. You don't understand that maybe when I read this book, I see something different than when you read this book. Maybe when I'm in an AA meeting and I hear somebody talk, I hear something different than you hear. Maybe I see something different than you see. Maybe it is possible to have a real relationship with people even after they are physically dead. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows. Clear away the record of your past. Give freely of what you find. Join us. We're with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. We're with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. You know who they're with in the fellowship of the Spirit? People who are doing this stuff. They're with the people who are doing that stuff. They're not in the fellowship of the people. You see, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There's a different requirement for a membership in the fellowship of the Spirit. Everybody comes into AA here. AA has a desire to stop drinking. Very few people have a desire to become members of the fellowship of the Spirit. The not drinking thing is easy to get. Everybody gets it. Everybody here is sober tonight. Not everybody here is going to stay sober. Not everybody here is going to be happy being sober. I had the benefit of knowing, I've been sober a little over 27 years. I had the benefit of knowing, I want to tell you two stories, personal stories, which I'm not sure they have to do with anything. But, you know, it ain't going to kill you. They're true. If you looked at me at 27 years sober, and I'm so full of faults and screw-ups, and I got so far to go, it's ridiculous. I don't want to ever, you know, I am what I am right now, and I give out what I give out right now. This is who I am, and you know, I'd like to hope that I have a bit more faith, and I'm just a better person 10 years from now or 5 years from now if I'm allowed to live. But I mean, the truth of the matter is, I don't ever want to give anybody the opinion like I've made it or I'm perfect or any of that stuff. But the fact of the matter is, I am the product of 27 years of doing what I'm doing, mistakes and all, and following who I'm following, and experiencing what I'm experiencing. So my experiences, the things I've seen and things I've felt, has changed me into the person I am right now. Part of my experience is reading this big book, is hanging out with certain people, is seeing certain things. So the truth of the matter is, besides actually reading the big book, and pointing out certain things in the big book, if I'm going to do anything for you, or be honest with you at all, try to help anybody, I need to somehow, as honestly as possible, transmit to you the experiences I've seen. And what because you may not have been there, but maybe if I can tell you some of the things that I've seen, and it's happened to me in my life, maybe one or two of you might say, wow, I could see how maybe that'll be the piece that of the puzzle that all of a sudden something will click for you. Because in 27 years, you go through a lot of stuff. Has anybody you've noticed after you stop drinking come day, like life goes on? Have you noticed that? Has anybody after come day been lonely? You know, has anybody ever been lonely after come day? Have anybody been saying, why don't I have a guy, why don't I have a gal, why don't I have somebody? Has anybody ever come day and been bored? Has anybody ever come day and actually worried about money or have been anxious about stuff or... You know, been up at 3 o'clock. You ever been up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you just sort of wake up and you can't get back to sleep and your mind's going a million miles per hour and there's nobody to call or anything like that? I mean, has everybody been AA and like really had like a roller coaster ride in this deal? Has that ever happened to you? You know, and you think it's going to go away and then you've got 9 years sober and it's still going on, or 10 years and 15 years it's still going on? And maybe you're getting a little nervous about that deal? When you're in AA for 27 years, you get a chance. You get bounce checks. You get to experience bounce checks. You get to experience not having money. You get to experience being broke. You get to experience being lonely. You get to experience people don't understand. You get to experience things happening to you that are unfair. You know, I'm an alcoholic, so I am the best judge of what's unfair. Believe me, I can see unfairness a mile away. Whenever things don't go my way, it's like universally unfair. There's a cosmic accident, you know? But one of the things that has happened to me that I've experienced in AA, you know, sometimes there's stuff that happens that are, you know, sometimes there's stuff you go through, some suffering you go through, which is absolutely necessary. We talked about in the seventh step. and you somehow come out the other end and you're not drinking, you don't even, you're like running around like a chicken with your head chopped off. You don't even know how you're staying sober. You just know you're nuts. You're talking to people, you're nuts, you're going around. Anybody ever do this stuff where you don't have any idea how you made it through that week? You're absolutely, absolutely nuts. But somehow you talk to a million people, you went to meetings, everything like that, but and you think you're running around like a chicken with your head chopped off, but even though you're running around like a chicken with your head chopped off, you did that head chopping off thing all within the ambit of AA. In other words, you were running around like a chicken with your head chopped off, not knowing what you're doing, but you weren't around in the bar, you weren't in the titty bar. It was all like in AA meetings or with AA people or with AA books or something like that. And somehow you didn't know what you did, but you came out the other end, you're not drinking, you feel okay now. And maybe a month or two down the road, all of a sudden you've changed. So sometimes it works like that. You sort of turn it over a little, you pray, you go to meetings, everything. Somehow things get better and you change and you get better and you sort of mature up. And you go through a lot of, it's like, you know, push-ups in this deal. And there's no rhyme or reason. You don't even, you can't, if somebody asked you what you did, you wouldn't even be able to tell them. You weren't even keeping notes, you know what I mean? You just know, you were here, this happened, you got there, and now you're here, and this has happened, you were like a nutcase. And, yeah, but you seem so calm now. He says, yeah, I'm better. Yeah, you don't even know. You can't even take credit for it because you don't even know what you did. There are other things that happen in AA. And there are things that happen in AA that happen to you even now. People you hear, maybe me tonight, maybe somebody else. Things that you experience that you're listening to stuff, you don't even know how it's working on you, and like 6 months down the road, you've changed or something happened, and you think it had something to do with that thing because you can't get it out of your mind. And you've just been thinking about it, thinking about it, thinking about it, and all of a sudden something snaps. And it changes, you know, that kind of thing. And it's mysterious, you can't figure out how change happens. It doesn't happen like drinking. You know how it happens with drinking. See, we're so used to drinking. The way it happens with drinking is, you know, you feel bad, you take a drink, you feel better. Like in a split second. Whack, shot, bam. Whack, you know, bam, I'm fine. You know, it doesn't happen like that in AA, you know? It may take 6 months to do what like a couple of shots will do in 5 seconds, you know? There are some things that happen which can make an impression upon you. There is stuff that can happen that make an impression upon you. You know when it's making an impression upon you, when it's 10 years down the road and you're talking at a meeting and you're talking about something that happened to you like 9 years ago that you remember like it was yesterday. In 27 years of going to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had the eighth step is about relationships. It's about relationships with people and fixing those things up. And I've had relationships with members of old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had relationships with old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I think probably the best, almost most solid thing that I can say, you know, you may not be a good reader, you may not be a good writer, you may not be able to do the steps well, you may not even understand this stuff, but I put my money on a guy who hangs out with an older member of Alcoholics Anonymous who's on the right track immediately about being on the bus. There's something about hanging around stable members of Alcoholics Anonymous, older members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I was going to say, what's the thing that because it wasn't my thinking, the thing that helped me the most is just hanging around my sponsors and the older members of Alcoholics. Because the funny thing is, if you hang around with somebody with 20, 25, 30 years, they tend to know other people that have 25, 30 years. So you tend to be in a group of people that have like 25, 30 years. And think in a certain way, and they are a certain way, and it sort of rubs off on you without you even noticing it. And I've had the occasion, I don't want to bring people down, but I just want to tell you a little story about something, about me and how I built up my relationship with God, because that's really what this whole thing is about. You know, because that's really what this whole thing is about. Because that's really what this whole thing is about. So when you've hanging around for 27 years, you build relationships with people who are longtime members of AA, guys like Joe Snyder and Bob Sullivan, my first two sponsors, Al Kennedy and Jack Sullivan and people like that. Sometimes these people die on you. And I'll tell you the truth. I want to tell you the truth. I have had the occasion to be at the bedside with people who are dying, at least 4 to 5 people, who are longtime members, I'm talking about 25 to 30 to 35 to 40 years in AA, who were died. I had at least one die in my arms. My first sponsor died in my arms up here in Hollywood. And that's the story, and all of them are stories. And my second sponsor and another person died like within minutes or an hour of when I was with them, and I was watching them die. And then the third man I saw who was dying, had terminal disease, I talked about him from time to time, Al Kennedy, a few months before he died. I saw him in an AA meeting, sharing an AA meeting. So I've had occasion to be with men who have 30, 40 years who are dying of cancer. Very painful. Not a pretty death. I'm talking about gasping for the last breath, not being and knowing they're dying over a long period of time. I have occasion to watch that. Some of them had groups of people around them. A lot of sponsors. My first sponsor had nobody. I showed up there. He was dying. He had some kids. They were somewhere. And I was the only thing one who was there. In the last few minutes, he didn't even know I was there. You know what I mean? So I've been with people who are dying. Now, let me tell you what the deal is on that deal. Because I've seen it. This is stuff I've seen. When you're dying of cancer, when you're with somebody who's dying of cancer, let me tell you what the bottom line is. The bottom line is this. You're the only one going through it. You see, you can have the entire 101 club there. You understand what I'm saying? You can have the entire group there. You can have all your sponsors there. But let me tell you something. There's only one person going in the casket. And everybody knows that. It's the unspoken thing. Everybody knows that's surrounded, no matter how much they love them, that they're not dying. And the guy who's lying there knows he's the only guy who's dying. You understand? He's doing this thing alone. He's going somewhere. And let me tell you something else. When you're dying, and I've learned this from talking to these people, and you can sort of sense this. Whatever you're thinking about now, whatever you've thought about in the last month, every thought you've had in the last month, every single thing you've thought about in the last month, everything you're thinking about now. Listen, when you're thinking about dying, you don't think about any of that stuff at all. Trust me, you don't worry about taxes. You don't worry about the mortgage. You don't worry about the girlfriends or the boyfriends. You don't think about things like, well, I wonder what he thinks of me, or what they're thinking about me, or what's going to happen in the 101 club. Or every thought that you've had up until this point that are so important to you, it's like the slate is wiped clean. Because when you know you're dying, and you're hours or weeks away from dying, you're in your bed dying, that kind of thing, he says, the only thing, there's only one thing to think about, eternity. And you don't get more weightier and depthier than that. And guess what? Here's the cool part. I ain't talking about anything that everybody here ain't going to go through. Now, this is not a cool thing to talk about, you know, because it's not real happy, but I'm going to tell you where this comes in. I watched these men because I hung around them, and I loved them. And I watched, you see, it's one thing to watch some guy how he handles himself at the podium. It's one thing to watch some guy how he handles himself, you know, with girls or in the job or making money. But I watched these guys, how they handled that eternity thing. It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. You know, us people who whine over everything, with thumb-sucking crybabies over anything, it's pretty wild when you see a guy with 30, 40 years, how he handles knowing he's going to die. It's a pretty impressive thing. It impressed me a lot. Watching that, being there, watching that, is more impressive than any AA meeting you'll ever go to. My telling you this, even if it impressed you, or even if you get something from it, is nothing compared to what it would be if you were lying or sitting there by Jack Sullivan's bed while I was reading the 23rd Psalm. It's nothing compared to actually being there. So it was really clear to me. This stuff they talk about in the big book, about dispelling fear, and we don't apologize for saying God, and the power that faith has in your life. It is clear to me, it is so clear to me, the difference when you see faith operating in a man's life, when they know that there's nothing left, there's nobody left, everything he has is taken away, and there's just him and eternity, and you see how faith is worse than that person's life. Let me tell you something, you know one thing. You don't want to be in that position and sitting there trying to struggle with the third step. Because one of the things that I realized with these men is these were men that didn't develop that faith right there an hour before they died. You ever see newcomers in here trying to struggle with the God thing? Like they're all over the place. They're going crazy. Can you imagine what it would be like if you were trying to work that out an hour before you die? That'd be a tough deal, you know? I mean, it's bad enough when you first come in sober. It'd be a tough deal if they said you got an hour to live, you know what I mean? The God thing would be a tough deal to work. The faith thing would be a tough... Let me tell you something. As terrible and horrible and scary, you imagine the scariest thing you could possibly have in your life. There could be nothing scarier than have 2 or 3 hours or a week left to live and not have that faith thing locked up and in your pocket. Now, here's the deal. I watched how they handle death. And there's that, and these are people that were handling, they walked into that death thing after a long life of faith. The stuff I'm talking about tonight, the stuff that we're talking about in the book. And they handled it so well. And the only thing I tell you is that it's so clear to me. It's so clear to me that a person who could be dying, that could handle death so well because of his faith, it's so clear to me that it must make an unbelievable difference in how you handle life. I mean, if you can handle death the way these men handle death, it's so clear to me that I want that deal while I'm 59 years old and alive and kicking. It's so clear to me the difference between walking through life without that versus walking through life with that, and the things that would come to you and how you would be and how the relationships you'd have with people and how you deal with people and how you'd feel about yourself and how you'd feel about life and what would happen as far as worry and cares and fear and everything. It's so clear to me that there, for me, there is no allure in the other stuff. Because this thing would be so cool, is so cool to have in your pocket. It's far more desirable than anything you could possibly talk to me about. Now, I sponsor a lot of guys. And a lot of them call me up. And you know what they want to talk to me about? They get a little frustrated with me. Because they really want to talk to me about stuff that I'm not going to talk to them about. They don't understand why I don't want to talk to them about their girlfriend or their job or their money. They don't understand. They don't even understand. They're like this. Don't you hear what I'm talking about? Because you see, they think that shit is important. Of course, that's why they've been drinking. That's why they're miserable, because they've always thought that stuff was important. When I know it's all bullshit. But you see, I wish I could do it like DNA, just inject them so they could feel like I do. You know what I mean? But I can't, because that obsession with that deal is as strong as the obsession with booze. It's even stronger than the obsession with booze because it's all over the planet. Because everybody has it. Because you turn on the TV and it's there. And you turn on the radio, it's there. And it's all the worldly clamors that got Bill Wilson drinking. It's all the stuff that we think it's important until you got that hour left to live. Man, I'll tell you, blessed is the man who gets that deal before he has an hour left to live. Boy, wouldn't it be great if you got that deal like when you have 20 years left to live? So you can like raise your kids with that deal and have grandkids with that deal and experience life with that deal and talk to people with that deal going on in your life. That'd be a cool deal, wouldn't it? That's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's our book, The Spiritual Transformation. Ideas, attitudes, and the thoughts of these men's lives are suddenly cast to one side. They become dominated by a whole new set of ideas, emotions, and attitudes. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to come in here, you want to listen to some guy to talk about a drunk log. There ain't nothing wrong with drunk logs. There ain't nothing wrong with the drinking thing. There ain't nothing wrong with the stuff you guys talk about. You know, you're going to talk about it. It's going to be okay. It's going to be like this from now until the cat. It's also not bad. Once in a blue moon, to hear one guy talk about this shit, it ain't going to kill you. It's the other stuff that's going to kill you. Well, there's one thing I want to talk to you about, but we don't have time. I'll do it next week. Thank you.